How long can a novel be? Is there or should there be an outer limit? Samuel Richardson's Clarissa is 1,500 pages. Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged clocks in at about 1,000. But Mark Danielewski is working on a 27-volume novel. It's called The Familiar, and the first installment is just out, 800 pages, about a 12-year-old girl who finds a kitten. Danielewski is kind of a poster boy for innovative fiction. His debut novel, House of Leaves, was full of multiple layers, strange typography, footnotes inside other footnotes. The critics loved it. It's got a huge cult following. And now he's back with, well, here's an example. It's narrated by a 12-year-old girl who's living with epilepsy. Her name is Xanther.
Dr. Potts never made Xanther feel punished. And eventually the consequences of this really sank in, Xanther getting the drift that these were her 50 minutes, and she could trust him for the most part, even if she had no idea why the most part or even what the not most part was, parts which made no difference if she got right to it, like she did today, following early advice by Dr. Potts. Try telling me first the thing that is most difficult to tell. I will help you. Or if not that, then ask me a question that is most difficult to ask, and I will help you. So Xanther went right to the raindrops, the number that said there was a number, even as it hit a number that was no number, and how it had made her feel. She even explained how her friend Clay has a brother named Phineas who is brilliant but fears dolphins, or not the dolphins, but how many dolphins there are, because his fear is also all about counting, because when you see three dolphins playing in the waves, that means there are really like nine with the rest under the waves. And if you see like a lot, like 27, there are really like 243. And that's just when we're talking about dolphins. What if we're talking about bad things like counting crimes? And then your mind really heats up and keeps heating up until it might turn into sticky, smelly smoke. Xanther told Dr. Potts, and this part was really difficult, how Clay thought his brother was crazy and needed to get back in a hospital again. Phineas had already tried to kill himself twice. Like Xanther, he's left-handed. Clay's called him schizo. Actually, more than that, Phineas can solve a Rubik's Cube in under 5 minutes.
That's Mark Danielewski reading from his new novel, and here's his conversation with Doug Gordon.
Mark, you've said that The Familiar will show that the novel can stalk, take down, and devour the television series. Is that a fair quote?
That's a fair quote.
Do you see television, film, and the internet as competition?
Certainly. I think, you know, all forms of media are means of distracting one from reading, and certainly a lot of young people that I encounter outside of bookstores or readings are not reading. But I think what has always interested me is kind of bringing forth not only what the book itself is capable of doing, the novel, the pages, the codex itself, but actually the way language can tickle parts of our imagination and bring a new kind of vibrancy and awareness to our lives that goes beyond what can actually be displayed on any kind of screen. And so the interaction that Xanther has with a rainstorm is very important for a lot of reasons. In one sense, it's a storm, and another sense, it's the storm of questions that she has that literally in some ways become kind of a seizure of information. She's the heart of the story, especially for me, because she's so brave in facing that deluge that she is in the midst of. And isn't that where we all are right now, that we are dealing with this deluge of information, whether it's Twitter or texts or phone calls or websites or however we sort of traffic information now, frequently more and more impersonally, though it's guised as this kind of personal interaction. And the big question that many of us are afraid to ask is, how do I navigate this? Do I just put on a pair of galoshes? Do I grab an umbrella? What are those things? Or am I actually going to drown in that storm? Sure, it's about Xanther going to get her surprise, a little creature that is way beyond the reach of any form of this kind of technology that we're so obsessed with. But it's also how to manage this flood of information that we are faced with.
This being one of your books, it is not a traditional book by any stretch of the imagination because there are different fonts corresponding to the different characters, there are illustrations, the text takes a variety of forms. It often resembles concrete poetry. One of my favorite parts is that double-page spread you have on pages 68 and 69, where you've created this rainstorm with the layout of the words and multiple raindrops that are made out of the words. How many raindrops? And the sections are color-coded according to the various protagonists. Anything I'm missing?
You're doing a pretty good job.
Thank you. So that raises the question that with all of your work, it seems, and especially with The Familiar, it seems like you're really trying to expand the possibilities of what a novel can be and the forms that the book as a physical object can assume. Is that fair to say? Is that a goal, something that drives you in your work?
Well, the aim is never, okay, let's produce the most amount of pages or the most amount of colors or the most amount of scattered text. You know, it's not that simple. While working with Xanther, while working with her father, Anwar, or her mother, Astaire, they bring to life a certain kind of language. They bring to life a certain kind of color. You know, they have a certain kind of voice. As you know, I've been doing this now for 15 years, at least in the public eye. And when House of Leaves came out, you know, everyone said, well, this is just nonsense and this is just different fonts. But, you know, it quickly became apparent by readers that these design elements help locate you quickly within the character. You immediately know you're with Luther or you're with Jing Jing in Singapore, and you begin to visually associate who they are by the language that they use and that is visualized within the book. So by following their personalities, their impulses, their narratives, it begins to create the structure which is the end result that you have before you, or the end beginning result that I've been working on for 9 years. So here I've been working on 9 years for this thing that is still a work in progress. We're going to see what happens next, and then we're going to see what kind of readership develops around it. Are there readers out there that will support such a project? Or will it be, like many a television show, canceled long before it reached its dramatic ending?
Mm-hmm. This idea of readers is interesting because in light of the fact that you have said that your books are not CD players, they're instruments, and a reader has to be willing to play them. That's a very appropriate analogy, it seems to me, because you have to learn how to read your books in the same kind of way that you have to learn to read music. Are you concerned that potential readers are going to be scared off by your approach?
It's certainly possible, but my adage has always been never underestimate the reader, and the readers actually have never let me down.
Yeah. How experimental can a novel be? Do you think there are limits?
We're going to find out, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Do you think that you have to rein in some of the creative impulses in order to make sure that you have some readers, or can you just let your imagination run wild and go as far as you want and just hope that you'll get some to come along for the ride? Is that something you think about?
Experimental is tricky because it tends to sort of suggest that things are randomly placed and that their occurrences are so ambiguous that one can't really make sense of them in a way that creates a sort of a transportable idea or a certain dramatic linear experience. But in fact, this book is very linear. This book has very specific character arcs. It has very specific interactions. And in that sense, it's much closer to what a television show does in the way its arc is carried out. So I don't really see it as being that experimental. You know, I read the concrete poetry of the 60s, Apollinaire, you know, Faulkner's discussion about multiple colors for his books. These were like very, very early experiments that I'm actually implementing and refining, but they certainly didn't start with me. The question is, could they be used to harness something that was less abstract? Once you're immersed in the worlds, whether it's House of Leaves, Only Revolutions, or The Familiar, then you begin to see in some ways how formally organized it is and how much fun it can be.
Getting back to the TV series analogy for just a moment, because there is so much going on in this first volume of what is first of hopefully 27 volumes, I'm curious, are you going to start each subsequent volume with a TV-style recap, you know, previously on The Familiar?
Such a great question. That's actually what I'm working on right now. We're trying to figure out really what to do with the flap copy for volume 2.
The creative spirit really runs in your family. Your sister is the singer-songwriter Poe. You've collaborated with her. And your father, Tad Danielewski, was a filmmaker. Did you ever share any of your writing with him?
Yes. There was a a piece that I wrote for my father when I learned that he had cancer and that he was hospitalized. And I got on a Greyhound bus in New York, and I didn't sleep. And for 3 days and three nights or whatever it was, I wrote constantly. And at the end of this journey, I presented him with this story called Redwood, which is buried somewhere.
Can you tell me about when you presented that manuscript to your father in his hospital bed? Can you take me back to that?
It was actually at home. He'd come home, and it was a pretty upsetting moment, because for me it was a gesture. It was a gift, and I think now I can sort of see it as kind of an absurd gift. But I wanted him. I don't know what I was thinking, but I wanted to present him with this thing that would be meaningful to him. And his response was, "Well, why don't you go get a job at the post office?"
Oh, dear.
And it was so brutal at that moment. And of course, I can see now that it was brutal also because, you know, the prospect of his death was amplifying everything.
Yeah.
But for me, it was him saying, I never want you to write again. I don't want you to participate in this. And I ripped the thing up entirely, just tiny little pieces, and I threw it in a dumpster. And then about 3 days later, my sister took me out to dinner, and she said, "How are you doing?" And I was really broken. It was kind of a near suicidal act. In some ways, it was a suicide. I was completely numb, and she took out of her bag this folder, and I looked inside, and she had taped that story back together. She had gone into the dumpster and found all those pieces and reassembled for me my future.
Mark Danielewski is the author of The Familiar. He talked with Doug Gordon. Volume 3 will be out June 14th.